And you're holding Chafbeis Amud Aleph, the first Mishnah, four lines from the top. Still continuing on the topic of Eidos HaChodesh. Now, we know when it comes to most kinds of Eidos, relatives are possible to give Eidos, you know, relatives of any of the Balei Dinim or relatives of each other, for example, or two brothers or a father and a son or whatever. So does that apply to Eidos HaChodesh as well? That's going to be the subject of our Mishnah and the Gemara. The Mishnah says, if a father and son together see the new month, Yohu, they should both go to Beis Din, even though they're not going to be able to testify together. Not because they're going to be able to combine together and the two of them together will be able to be Eidos for the Chodesh. But so that if one of them ends up being Posel, the other one will be able to combine with somebody else. Now, Rashi says Yipossel doesn't necessarily mean Possel as in it turns out one of them is a Baal Aveira or whatever. It means, for example, we're going to have in the next Perek, Beis Din interrogates them and asks them a bunch of questions about how and where they saw the moon. So it can happen that one of them says something wrong, and therefore Beis Din disqualifies his Eidos. So nevertheless, though, you're still going to have the other one can then go find somebody else who'll say similar to what he's saying. For example, we're going to learn in the next perek that one of the things they ask them is how high off the ground was the moon. So, for example, you might have the Gemara talks about it in terms of what it calls mardeyas. Mardeya literally is an ox goad. So it means some kind of standard unit of measurement that they would use in those days. Like we might talk about degrees. Or hand heights or whatever, they might talk about Maudeus. So let's say if one of them says two and the other one says three, that's not enough of a discrepancy to throw out their Eidos. But if one of them says three and the other one says five, that's too big of a discrepancy. Beis Din will say, I'm sorry, we can't accept that Eidos when there's such a big discrepancy in it, but neither one is disqualified per se. All it is so they'll go asking around among the other Eidim, who is there over here whose perception of it was that it was five high, or four for that matter, or six, because after all, you can have a difference of one. And the same thing, the three can go around asking who has the perception that it was two or three or four, and then they'll be able to come back and they'll be able to be accepted. So the same thing over here with the father and the son. If one of them ends up saying the wrong thing, the other one will be able to join with somebody else who says similar to him. But yeah, if the two of them together are saying the same thing, we can't accept it because they're a father and a son and they're two relatives. Another explanation of Yipossel Echad Mehen that Amram learns that it means literally that one of them becomes possel, one of them turns out to be an Ovei Avedus, which we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah or some other kind of psul Eidos. Anyway, Reb Shimon says that you don't need any of that. The fact is, Reb Shimon says, a father and son together, or any two relatives, are kosher for Eidos HaChodesh, for reasons that we're going to say in the Gemara. Rabbi Yossi says, I'll tell you a story illustrating not like Reb Shimon. It happened once with Tuvia the doctor, that was his name. He one time saw the new moon in Yerushalayim. There was who of Noiva Abdi Meshukhra. There were three of them standing together, him, his son, and his freed slave. He had an Eved Knani, which he had previously freed. And now that guy was standing with them also and seeing the moon. So they came to Beis Din. The Kibla Koyanim, Oisiv Espnoi, the Koyanim accepted him and his son, Upostlus Abdoi, and they said his Eved is Postal. Now, why? The guy's not an Eved anymore. He's an Eved Meshukhra. But so now they held like Reb Shimon that relatives are kosher, therefore they had no problem with him and his son. But they held that the Edim for this purpose have to be Miyuchasim. So therefore, an Eved Meshukhra, fine, an Eved Meshukhra is a full fledged Yid, but they have to be Miyuchasim, so no Avodim Meshukhrarim, and also no Gerim or Mavzerim. So they accepted him and his son, but not his Eved Meshukhra. Who are these Kohanim, by the way? I mean, there was a Beis Din of Kohanim in the Beis Mikdash, but in general, their role was that they dealt with matters involving the Korbanos. If there was a Shailan Korbanos, for example, then you would go to them. So what they're doing over here involved in Eidos HaChodesh is not really so clear. But in any case, that's how it was. So they held like Reb Shimon, but when Tovia and his group came in front of Beis Din, Kiblu, it was the other way around. Kiblu Oseves Avdoi, they accepted him and his Eved Meshukhra because they didn't hold that he has to be Miyuchas. or possible, that's Benoni, and they said his son is possible, because again, they held like the Chachamim of our Mishnah, that a father and son together are possible. So you see, Rabbi Yossi says from that story, the Beis Din Shalkoinim may have held like Rabbi Shimon, but the Beis Din HaGadol, the actual Sanhedrin that determined the new months, they held like the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Levi, my time of the Rabbi Shimon, why does Rabbi Shimon hold that unlike in all other cases of Eidos where you can't have relatives, why over here does Rabbi Shimon say you could? So Dichtiv, Vayomer Hashem Moshe v'al Aaron v'Eretz Mitzrayim Leimer, Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aaron, who are brothers after all, in Eretz Mitzrayim, and said to them, Achodesh Hazelochem, this month is for you, which means Reb Shimon learns that to mean Eidos Zuti take Sheira Bachem. Uniquely among Eidos, this kind of Eidos will be kosher with you. So even though you're brothers, you, Moshe and Aaron, would be kosher as Eidei Achodesh. So you see, Reb Shimon says that this is an exception to the rule. On the other hand, Rabbanan, the Chachamim, answer back. They say, no, it means Eidos Zutehim Asura Lachem. It means this Eidos is given over to you. In other words, you, people like you who are Choshuv, are the ones that I'm giving over, that you're the ones who can listen to the Eidim and determine when Rosh Chodesh is. Not just any old Beis Din. But it's not coming to be Machshev that relatives can be Eidim. It means that people of Moshe and Aaron's caliber, or like their caliber in every generation, like we're going to learn at the end of the next Perek, Yiftach Bedorah, Kishmul Bedorah, are the ones who are empowered to do this. Meanwhile, Tosfos points out, again, Reb Shimon holds, or at least the Beis Din Shalkoinim rather held, the Beis Din Shalkoinim who passed Turiya's slave, or freed slave, they held that the similarity with Moshe and Aaron is not just that they were brothers, it's also that they were miyuchosim, and therefore they learned that Eidei HaChodesh have to be miyuchosim as well. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Amar Rav Yossi, Maisi B'Tuvya HaRoi Filchola, So who is the halacha like? Amar Rav Chanan Bar Rava, Tuch Sechir Rav Shimon. So Rav Chanan Bar Rava says the halacha is like Rav Shimon, relatives, a father and son, two brothers or whatever, are kosher for Eidos HaChodesh. Amalei Rav Huna, Rav Chanan Bar Rava, so Rav Huna says, how can you say that? Rav Yossi Umayse, you have Rav Yossi saying the other way around, and usually when you have Rav Yossi arguing with Rav Shimon, usually the halacha is like Rav Yossi. And you have Rabbi Yossi tells us a maise, and maise rav, when what was actually done in practice, is a much more powerful thing than a theoretical statement of halacha. And there you have the Beis Din actually was machshir Tovia and his slave, but not his son. So you have Rabbi Yossi against Rabbi Shimon, and you have the maise that he tells against Rabbi Shimon. But after amat halacha hilchas like Rabbi Shimon, and you Rabbi Chanan Bar Rava are saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, how could you say that? Amaloi, so Rav Chanan Bar Rava says, it has to be. There were many times when I, standing as a Talmud in front of Rab, said the halacha is like Rav Shimon. And he didn't say anything the opposite. So it has to be. If Rav approved that the halacha is like Rav Shimon, then that's how it is. Amaloi, so Rav Huna asked him, how exactly, what was the lashon that you learned the Mishnah in front of Rab? Which opinion is which? Amalei Ipcha, and he tells him that I learned it, and he quotes for him what he said, which turned out to be the opposite of the way we have it in the Mishnah. That Rabbi Yossi is the one who says it's kosher, and Rabbi Shimon is the one who brings the Maaseh with Tuvya HaRoyfe. Amalei, well, that explains why Rav didn't say anything to you, because in your version of the Mishnah, Rav Shimon is the one who brings the story with Tovia HaRoife, and from that story we learn that the halacha is that Krovim are possible for Eidos HaChodesh. So okay, you have usually the halacha is like Rav Yossi against Rav Shimon. Fine, here Rav Shimon has a story, has a maaser Rav on his side. So therefore, Rav figured you can pass him like that. But not the standard version of the Mishnah, Rav Huna tells him, is that Rav Shimon is the one who says it's kosher. Rav never meant that the halacha is like Rav Shimon in that. You quoted the Mishnah to him the other way around. What's the actual halacha? Oma tovi brei demori tovi oma ma'ukva oma shvul hilchasak Rav Shimon. The halacha is like Rav Shimon. Now, there are in fact many different gersois that say that it's supposed to be ain or less hilchasak Rav Shimon. The halacha is not like Rav Shimon. For the reasons that we just said. And in fact, in the Rambam, in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, Paskins not like Reb Shimon, he Paskins like the Chachamim, and like Reb Yossi's story, that Krovim are possible for Eidos HaChodesh. You don't have to have Miuchasim, like the Beis Din Shochanim thought, but you do have to have two people who are not related to each other. Okay. The Mishnah says, Eilu Hein
HaPsulim. Why the Chachamim don't make their luck? Why the Chachamim don't make automatically their luck in this case? Why would it have to be such a discussion?
Because the fact is that we had different opinions about it, and you might argue that Reb Shimon's drasha from Hachodesh as Elochem is a strong one. So therefore, we need to be told that the halacha nevertheless is not like Reb Shimon. That's how it is.
Why even if it's
because sometimes we need to discuss these points. Sometimes even out Yochid v'Rabim, usually halacha k'Rabim, but not always. So in this case, we needed to point that out. And after all, we had Reb Chanan bar Rava saying the halacha is like Reb Shimon. So especially we needed to clarify that.
Doesn't make them a rabbin.
Then
it's in two people.
The fact is, when we have Reb Chanan bar Rava saying the halacha is like Reb Shimon, we need to clarify the matter, and we need to end up saying what the actual halacha is. Now, in the end, you have two different girsos in the Gemara over here, whether Shmuel said the halacha is like Reb Shimon or the halacha is not like Reb Shimon. The fact is, there are different girsos and there are different explanations. And the Yochid v'Rabim, halacha k'Rabim, is a useful tool, is a useful rule, but it's not always. We don't always apply it 100% of the time. So we need to discuss.
In which cases we don't apply it?
This might have been one of them. No, the point is.
No, I know, but.
One possibility is when you have a yochid where mistaber taime, where his reason that he brought for his din is very, very logical, and therefore we might say that. We've had many times examples like that where we go according to a yochid, even against the rabbim. It's not that common, but it does happen. Okay, let's go on. The Mishnah says, Elu hein apsulin, the following people are possible to give edus achodesh. Hamasachet b'kuvya, gamblers. So now you have Rashi over here mentions a point that the Gemara discusses elsewhere called asmachta loy kanya, which is what happens when you're gambling. You're figuring if the dice land or whatever it is lands a certain way, then I'm going to win X amount of money from you, and if not, then you're going to win X amount of money from me. That kind of commitment that's not based on anything fundamental, on anything serious like a kinyan or something, is called an asmachta. We take the view, Rashi says, that asmachta loy kanya, such a thing is not a valid form of kinyan. In other words, the other person is not wholeheartedly giving over the money when he loses the bet, when he loses the dice roll or whatever. So therefore, it's considered a type of gezel. Now, midaraisa, it wouldn't be considered gezel because you're not actually grabbing it out of the other person's hands. But midirabanan, it would be a form of gezel. The Gemara discusses that point in Sanhedrin and discusses another possibility. Maybe it's not a problem of asmachta. Maybe we're talking about somebody who gambles full time and therefore he's not doing something constructive for society, and therefore we're concerned that he might testify falsely. But here Rashi is going with the first explanation. The second one is umalve beribis, people who lend at ribis. Now again, obviously ribis is also daraisa, but focusing on the issue of gezel, then it's not gezel daraisa because the other guy is willingly giving the ribis. This is all according to Rashi. We'll talk in a second what Tosfos says. So on a daraisa level, you can't passel him for being a gazlan because he's not actually taking, he's not actually grabbing it from the other person's hand. But midrabanan, he would be passel. The third one is umafriche yonim, people who make doves fly. Which Rashi brings one explanation from Sanhedrin that it means people who race pigeons, and again they bet on the outcomes of the races. So it's another kind of betting, another kind of gambling. The Gemara there in Sanhedrin mentions another possibility, which is that people who have trained doves, that they train to go and lure other doves away from the birdhouses so that they can take them. So these birdhouses are out in the middle, or out in the fields, or out in the middle of nowhere, or whatever. The person doesn't actually own the doves because they're in his birdhouses, but he didn't actually make any kind of kinyan on them. So it's not really considered. So according to Rashi, then it's another kind of gambling. So again, for the same reason as the dice, then it's not considered gezel daraisa. according to Tosfos, we're going to get to in a minute, that it may be the other possibility in the Gemara, where they have these trained pigeons, but it's not Gezel Daraisa, because again, the first person never really made a kinyan on these doves in the first place. And the fourth one is Besoichere Shviyas, people who sell Shmita food. We know that there's you're allowed to eat Shmita food. You're allowed to sell it in very small quantities, as we learned in Masech the Sukkah, but you're not allowed to open up a business selling Shmita food. So that makes them puzzle. The avodim and the fifth one that's puzzle is avodim knanim, because they're not because they're psula yichus. We said before we don't care about that, but Rashi mentions given that women aren't kosher, then a kavah chomer that slaves who generally speaking are chayiv only in the same mitzvahs that women are, a kavah chomer also that they're puzzle. Now this is all according to Rashi. Tosfos discusses this and says that actually another way of looking at it is that another way of looking at it is like this. When it comes to the gambling, we can say again that so one reason we said is because it's not Gezel Daraisa. Another one we said is because they're not Oiskin be Yeshuva Shalom. So fine, again, that's not Daraisa reason to passel them, but it would be a reason Dirabanan to passel them. The thing is like this. Tosfos learns that unlike Rashi, that it's only Gezel that's going to passel a person as an aid, Tosfos learns that other kinds of Averis Daraisa will passel a person as well. Therefore, we have to find how each of these things is only Dirabanan. So the gambling we took care of, Ribis, now Ribis itself obviously is Daraisa, but Tosfos says there are forms of Ribis we know that are only Dirabanan. For example, so the classic kind of ribis where we say I'm lending you $100, I want 110 back, I want 10% interest. That's ribis ksutza. That's also daraisa. According to that, that would be enough according to Tosfos to passel them as an aid because it's an isur daraisa. However, there's all kinds of other ribis that are only dirabanan. For example, things involving price changes and forward contracts and all kinds of things that are discussed in Perek Ezu Neshech and Bav Metzia. So let's say a person is lending with that kind of ribis, then it's only dirabanan. And especially also because people, or Tosfos says, maybe even if it is ribis daraisa, when would it passel him? Only when people know that it's something also. With ribis ksutza, with regular fixed ribis, people have the impression that since the other guy is giving it willingly, then there's no problem with it. They don't realize that it's still also. The pigeons, again, you have one where it involves pigeon racing, so it's another kind of mesachet l'kovya. The other one is, again, where you have pigeons that lure other people's pigeons. It's not real gezel, because, again, you never made a kinyan on your pigeon, so therefore it's really only darche sholem. As far as soichere shvius, so Tosfos again says there's two possibilities. One is that we're talking about shvius nowadays, which is only dirabanan. Or we're talking about there are cases where daraisa you'd be allowed to do a certain kind of business with peiros shvius, and only dirabanan is it also. In fact, Tosfos refers to something that we learned about in Sukkah when we talk about buying the esrog from an amoreth doing shmita. We said that we said either the guy has to give you the esrog for free or you overpay for the lulav and it includes the price of the esrog. So there was no problem of schoda there. There was only a problem of that you're not allowed to give the money to an amoretz because he's not going to use it in the proper way and he's not going to do beer with it when the proper time comes. But we see that there are kinds of schoda that are also that are mutter, at least daraisa. Another point is again that not everybody realizes that schoda is other rishonim say not everybody realizes that schoda in peiros shvius is also daraisa. So therefore, again, it's not one of those ones that might be serious enough on a daraisa level to disqualify him. So then in that case, Tosfos says, if everything in our Mishnah is Dirabanan, then why are we mentioning slaves, which are Apostle Daraisa? Because you would have thought, look, they didn't do any Aveira, they didn't do anything wrong. So at least for Edus HaChodesh, they should be kosher. Just like Reb Shimon had said that close relatives are kosher. Okay, we said the Halacha is not like Reb Shimon, but still, at least maybe we should use a Svara, at least as far as Avadim. And the answer is that no, we don't do that. So the Mishnah continues, Zeh HaKlal, this is the general rule, Kol edus she'ena isha k'sherala, any edus that a woman would not be kosher for it, afhen en k'sherala, then all the people mentioned in our Mishnah are also not kosher to give such edus. Which, the Gemara says, the implication is, ha isha k'sherala, if you have an edus that a woman is kosher for example, to give edus that a person, that a man has died so that his wife can remarry, then such people are also kosher to give such edus. Another example would be, for example, that a soita who was secluded with this other man did in fact become tameh, was in fact mezana with him. Those kinds of things. A woman's edus is kosher, therefore we're saying all these psulim in our Mishnah would also be kosher. Amar Avashi, so Avashi says, Zoyseh Meres, so we can see from that. Gazlan de Divrehem, that somebody who is only considered a Gazlan on the Drabbanan level, for example, the gamblers, Shaden, La'edos Isha, they would be kosher to give testimony that for a woman that her husband has died so that she can remarry. There are Rishonim who learn that maybe even a psul edus daraisa would be allowed to, because after all, are they necessarily worse than an isha? The halacha, though, in Shulchan Aruch is not like that. The halacha is we don't accept edus, we don't accept actual edus from psulim daraisa. So if somebody, for example, is an actual gazlan daraisa, he actually grabbed something illegally from somebody else, we're not going to accept his edus for edus isha. However, what we can accept from him is mesiach lepitumai. If he's just like he's in casual conversation, he mentions something from which we see that he's saying that Pliny passed away, then we can use that as a basis for being matter that guy's wife to remarry. Okay. The Mishnah says, Misha Roa Sachodesh, if somebody saw the new moon, the Ein Yochel Lahalach, but he's not able to walk to Beis Din. Let's say it's Shabbos. Meilichim oseh al chamer. We can have him go on a donkey to go to Beis Din. Even in a bed. So even in a bed could mean that people pick up a bed and carry him, or it could mean that maybe they put the bed on the animal. The Pnei Yeshua, we've talked about before, learns with all of this that maybe only you can be over on Isurim Dirabanan. Or not Dirabanan, but at least not actual Malachas to allow him to travel to Beis Din. So he would say, in other words, that here we're talking about the mitah, means we place the mitah on the animal. You're doing the issur called Mechamer, where you're causing an animal to be walking, carrying a burden, but that's still not as stringent as the actual 39 Malachas. But according to everybody else, it would mean Poshet that you could have people could pick him up in a bed and carry him. The im soidalahem, if there are is an ambush on the way, you could have, for example, that the Baitusim or the Kusim, which we're going to talk about at the beginning of the next parak, would try to interfere with the Edim coming to Beis Din in order that Rosh Chodesh should be established according to the way they liked it. So if you know that there's going to be an ambush on the way, loichin be other maklis, they're allowed to take sticks with them to fight off the attackers. V'im hoisa derech rechoka. If it was a far journey and they're going to run out of food on the way, can be other mezonis, then they can take food with them. So again, according to the Pnei Yeshua, we would mean that all of this we're talking about, we're putting it on the donkey, so they're not actually carrying it in their hands, so they're not being over on a malacha daraisa. All they're being over on is mechamer, is having an animal go carrying a burden, and that would be mutter. According to everybody else, it means that even they themselves could be carrying the sticks or the food or whatever. Now, why is that? The Mishnah says, "Shal mahalach laila v'yom," because as long as the edim are within a night and a day's walk from Beis Din, travel from Beis Din, mechal lanas haShabbos, they can be mechal haShabbos, as we learned yesterday on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, that we learned from the pasuk Asher Tikroi Samamayadam, that they can be mechal haShabbos for this purpose, v'yotzin la'edus haChodesh, and go out to give edus haChodesh. Shenema, the pasuk that we quoted before in the Gemara, Eila Moyadeh Hashem Asher Tikroi Samamayadam. So we have to make it possible to establish the Yom Tovim B'Moyadam in their proper times. We said that originally that applied to every month, because every month you have a Moyad, you have Rosh Chodesh. After the Churban, they made a Takana, that it applies only to Nisan and Tishrei, because the dates of the Yom Tovim depend on those. Very unusual here that we have a Mishnah without Gemara on it. I think there's only one other place in Shas where you have such a thing, but okay, that's how it is. Hadron Alach Abba Rosh Hashanah. Mishnah starts off. Im Einen Makirin Osei, if the Beis Din does not recognize the aid, who's the aider, aidim, who are coming for Edus HaChodesh, whether they're trustworthy people, and they're not going to accept his Edus, as we're going to say later in the Mishnah, then the local Beis Din in his city can send along with him somebody else Or as we're going to see in the Gemara, on the face of it, it means, on the face of it means two people. So we'll get to that, to give edus on him that he is trustworthy, so that Basin can accept his edus. In other words, so you're going to have Reuven and Shimon, for example, saw the new moon, but Basin doesn't know who they are, and they have reason, they don't know. They might be by Tussim or what have you. So the Basin will send along with them Levi and Yehuda, where Levi and Yehuda are previously known to Basin to be trustworthy people. So therefore, they can give edus on Reuven and Shimon that they are trustworthy and they're fine. And Tosfos adds, we're saying, in other words, that those supplementary edim. Now, those supplementary edim themselves didn't see the new moon. Levi and Yehuda themselves didn't see the new moon. Otherwise, Reuven and Shimon aren't necessary. Levi and Yehuda will just go. But the point is that they're going only in order to testify that Reuven and Shimon are good people and you can accept their edus. They themselves, Tosfos says, are also able to be Mechalal Shabbos to go outside the Tchum and come to Beis Din, just like the edim themselves can. Now, why do we need this? The Mishnah says, Borishono ho yomakabim. Originally, they would accept edus on Rosh Chodesh from anybody, because after all, every yid has a cheskas kashrus. But once the baitusim messed things up, as we're going to have a case in the Gemara where they tried to interfere with things and manipulate things, his skinu, then the chachamim made a takana, shalo yom kabbalon elamin amakirin, that we're only going to accept edus achodesh only from people that Beis Din recognizes as trustworthy. So the Gemara starts off. My acher, what do we mean when we're saying that we send somebody else with the aid to testify on him? On the face of it, it means chad. On the face of it, it means one person. The problem is, v'chad mi meheman. Since when do we trust one aid? V'hatanya, we learn in a b'raisa, ma'isa shebohu ve'edav imoi l'hoid olav. We learn in a b'raisa, it happened once that an aid came in front of Beis Din on Shabbos with his aidim with him, and we see aidim plural. So it had to be two. So what are you telling me acher meaning that one is enough? Amar Papa, my acher zug acher. So the Papa says, you're right. The word acher doesn't mean one single aid. It means another pair of aids. In fact, Tosfos asks, so what? Even if it is only one aid, why shouldn't he be able to go? And there's a good chance he's going to find somebody else there. The same way as we just said before, that a father and son can go together to Beis Din, even though they can't give aiders together, because one of them might find somebody else to join up with. So why don't we say the same thing over here? Tosfos says, you're right. The fact is, the question is not really on the fact that he could be Mechal Shabbos. The question is, why is the Mishnah using the word acher, implying as if one is enough, when we know for a fact that you need two? So the Papa is saying that's not a problem. Just the word acher doesn't mean an individual person like you thought. It means another pair of aid. The Gemara says, Hachinami Mestabra. Yeah, in fact, now that we think of it, it's logical to say that that's what the Mishnah means. The Eloi Tema Hachi, because if you didn't say like that, after all, let's look at the first words of the Mishnah. Im ein makirin oisoi, it says if they don't recognize him. So my oisoi, who's the him? Ilema oisoi chad, do we mean that Beis Din doesn't recognize the one aid who comes? Well, anyway, v'chad mi meheman, even, fine, let's say we could say that the takana of the Chachamim was that we're going to trust one aid to testify about another yid. But definitely, in order for Eidus HaChodesh, for sure we're going to need two. For sure we can't accept one aid for Eidus HaChodesh. After all, Mishpat Ksivvei. After all, Kiddush HaChodesh is described as Mishpat, Ki Chayt Yisrael or Mishpat Lelekei Yaakov, and Mishpat presupposes that you have two Eidim, just like every other Mishpat. Ela Mai Oisoi. So obviously, when it says Imeinen Makirin Oisoi, it means Oisei Hazug. It means that Beis Din does not recognize the two members of that pair of witnesses. My Acher, Zug Acher. Therefore, by the same token, we can say that the word Acher means another pair of agents. Tosfos actually wonders why. You could conceivably have, let's say, of Reuven and Shimon. Maybe Beis Din knows who Reuven is. They know that he's trustworthy. They don't know Shimon. And therefore, maybe the Mishnah is saying that you can send along Adim to testify on behalf of Shimon. Why do we have to assume that Beis Din doesn't know either Reuven or Shimon? Fine. So the Gemara asks the other way around. V'chad loy meheman. So you're telling me, on the other hand, that one aid is not trustworthy to testify on behalf of the other aidim? Well, Tanya, we learn in a b'raisa. Ma'ase b'Reb Nehoroi. It happened once with Reb Nehoroi. Shaholach etzal aid. He went together with the aid, lahoyed olav, to give aid on him b'Shabbos. Usha, in the city of Usha. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta that the Sanhedrin moved to many different places. In the years before the Churban, it moved from Lishkas HaGozis to a place called Chanuyos, and then from Chanuyos to Yerushalayim proper, and then to Yavne, and so on and so forth. It traveled around to different places. So Usha was one of the places where it was. Usha is a town in the Galil. So one time during the time when the Sanhedrin was in Usha, then Rav Nehoroi went on Shabbos to give Eidos on behalf of another Yid that he's trustworthy and if they can accept his Eidos. So you see that one aid is enough because we're mentioning only Rav Nehoroi. The answer is Amri. They answered no. Rav Nehoroi Sada Achrina Haba Bahadei. The answer is that no. Rav Nehoroi actually did have another witness together with him. The reason why it doesn't mention him in the Braisa, Mishim Kvodosh Rav Nehoroi, is just because of the honor of Rav Nehoroi. It would be a dishonor to Rav Nehoroi to mention somebody else that would. In other words, what are we saying? Why are we bringing this story in the first place? We want to show that even Rav Nehoroi, a great Talmud Chacham, was knew that you can be Mechal Shabbos to go and testify on behalf of this other Yid. So to mention that he was somebody else with him would be what? We're learning from that other anonymous Yid. We're not going to do that. It's not respectful to Rav Nehoroi to say it's not enough to learn from him. We need to learn from the other person as well. Therefore, we mention only Rav Nehoroi, even though we're meant to understand that, of course, there had to be two, because there have to be two aided. Tosfos actually explains that what it is you had another person who had seen the new moon. That other person was also not known to Beis Din. So Rav Nehoroi went for both purposes. He's going to be the second aid for Eidos HaChodesh. He's also going to testify about this other Yid who's with him that he's trustworthy. Meaning for that there's going to be a third person. There's going to be somebody else there. Well, that's going to be Rav Ashi's answer actually. So actually that's going to be Rav Ashi's answer. In the first answer that we have over here, in other words, we're saying that Rav Nehoroi went for both purposes, to be made on Eidos HaChodesh and also to be made on this other Yid. And we're saying, according to that, the vote would be, there was another Yid. So in other words, you had three people going, according to that. You had the one aid who saw the new moon, but Beis Din doesn't know that he's trustworthy. You had Rav Nehoroi who saw the new moon and also can say that he's trustworthy. And you had a third person who didn't see the new moon, but knows that this other guy is trustworthy. So therefore, the first Rav Nehoroi and the other guy, first Rav Nehoroi and the third guy, that is, will come and say Eidos about the first guy that he's kosher. Then we'll call in Rav Nehoroi and the first guy and have them give their Eidos HaChodesh. So the point is, there was somebody else with Rav Nehoroi. We're just not mentioning him for the reason of the covered of Rav Nehoroi.
If a person is sober, he's too weak to go all the way up there.
So that's what we said. Then they can have him go on an animal and so forth. Yeah.
Oh, but he can't have someone go instead of him.
He could, obviously, but he himself could go, and they can have him go, if necessary, ride on an animal on Shabbos and so forth, like we said at the end of the previous paragraph. Tosfos gives another explanation that Rav Nehoroi had not actually seen the Chodesh himself. He was going only in order to testify on this other aid together with another Yid. So in other words, the vote would be, in other words, that there would have been altogether four people who are necessary. Two to say the Eidos HaChodesh and two to testify on him. Okay. Rav Ashi says you don't need that answer. A different answer is Rav Nehoroi, Sada Achrina Haba Usha. What happened was there was already another aid that Rav Nehoroi knew is located already in Usha. But also Rav Nehoroi leads to Rufi Ba'adei. So Rav Nehoroi is going to Usha to join up with him. In other words, so you have the first answer we said was that you have three people traveling to Usha. You have Ruvain who saw the new moon. You have Rav Nehoroi, and you have who saw the new moon and who can testify on Ruvain. And you have Shimon who can testify on Ruvain but didn't see the new moon. Rav Ashi is saying that no, you only had two people traveling. You had Ruvain and Rav Nehoroi. But Rav Nehoroi knows that in Usha, there's another fellow over there who knows Ruvain and can testify about him. So Rav Nehoroi is going to go join up with him, and together they'll go in front of the Beis Din. So the question involves Rav Nehoroi. Let's do Rufi Ba'adei. Rav Nehoroi went to join up with that other guy. So the question is, Yehochi Maila Memra, then what's the Chiddush? The answer is Ma'u Detema, Mesfeka, Lo Mechalin and Shabbos. You might think that because of a suffix, what if that aid is not home? What if he left town for Shabbos? Maybe you shouldn't travel to Usha on Shabbos on the supposition that the guy is there. Kamash Malan, therefore we're being told that even Mesfeka, you can do that.
Now, having one aid is just weird. No,
you have to be two aid. So the Gemara says, Ki Asa Ula, one time when Ula came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he reported to the people in Babel, Kadshula Yarcha B'Ma'arava, they were Makadish the Chodesh in the West, in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, and you should know that Rosh Chodesh was on such and such a day. So Amar of Kahana, so now before we were talking about needing two Edim. Here we have Ula by himself. But so the Amar of Kahana, Loimi Boya Ula de Gavri Rabahu, needless to say that Ula, who's a great Talmud Chacham, de Meheman, that we can trust him when he says that Beis Din was Makadish the Chodesh, Ela fila inish ta'alma nami meheman, even if it wasn't Ula, even if it was Stam, a regular person who came and said that, we would also believe him. Why, my timer, kol milsa David la'agluye la'meshakri ba'inshi, because anything that is going to eventually be revealed, people will not lie about. In other words, there's one thing, edus achoydish. The fact is, anytime you see it, most of the time when the new moon is being seen, it's kind of marginal. You might have seen it, you might have not, everybody has seen it. So therefore, a person might be motivated, as we're going to have soon in the Gemara, to go and give false edus about it. And the same thing with other things. But here we're talking about when based and established Rosh Chodesh is a fact. It's a known fact, which sooner or later everybody's going to find out. So if you come, so if you come and tell them that based in was Mekadesh the Chodesh and Rosh Chodesh is on Tuesday, and later on, you know that other people are going to come and say that, no, it was actually Wednesday, and you're going to be exposed as a liar, you're not going to do that to begin with. You're going to lose your reputation. Yeah. They say on this, by the way, that the expression is, loy meshakri ba inshi, that people don't lie about such things. Nowadays, unfortunately, you see that people will even lie about such obvious things. Obviously, you know, not everybody nowadays fits into the category of inshi. But anyway, yeah. So therefore, it's not just Ula. Any person would come and tell us when Beis Din was Mekadesh the Chodesh, we can listen to them. They ask a question, actually. Mefoshim asked the question, why do we need that anyway? We have a rule called Eid Echad Neman V'Isurin, that in general, for any matter of Isur V'Heter, we can trust one aid. For example, think of it. You can go eat by somebody's house and rely on their kashrus, even though you only have one aid, that the food is kosher, because you're allowed to do that. So why don't we say that over here? So there's a couple of reasons. One of them, again, is given that we're going to say soon you have the problem with the Baitursim, maybe we have extra reason, maybe we would think we have extra reason to worry about it. Or an interesting answer that Sam Sofer gives is because, after all, to the 30th of the month had a chazaka of being the 30th of the previous month. You had 29 days, and by assumption, we would assume it's a continuation of the previous month. So to take it out of that chazaka to say that, no, it's a new month, for that, you might need a higher standard of evidence, and therefore we need the chiddush that only because Milsa David Eloi Gluyi are we able to trust that. The Gemara says Tanya Nami Hachi. We learn similarly in a Braisa. Ba Echad B'Soifa Olam. If somebody came even from the end of the world, but Amar Kidshu based in a Chodesh, and he says based in with Mekadesh Chodesh, Nemon, we can believe him, and we can set up the Yom Tovim on that basis because again, he's not going to lie on something which is so obviously easily refutable. That's what we're saying. We don't have to worry that he's a Baitussi, because also the vote is like this. The Baitussim are interested in, as we're going to have now in the Gemara, they're interested in having that everybody should celebrate Pesach and Shavuos on a different day than they would have otherwise. For example, by saying that instead of Adar being 30 days, instead it's going to be 29, and the first day, and the second day Pesach will come out on Sunday, as we're going to have the story now in the Gemara. But they have no interest. It doesn't gain them anything if they make that one particular community of Jews is going to celebrate the Yom Tov on the wrong day. They don't care about that. That's not part of their agenda. So there's no reason to suspect that a Baitussi is going to come to one particular community and tell them that Rosh Chodesh is on the wrong day, because they don't have anything to gain by that.
But didn't have something to do with Machnas, that's the Shabbos?
Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about now. So Tananam, so we said in the Mishnah, but Rishon HaHoy Makablam Eidus HaChodesh B'Kol Adam B'Kola. Originally, they would accept Eidus HaChodesh from anybody. And we said that after the Baitussi messed up things, then they had to start asking for Eidim to testify on behalf of the people. So, we learn in a Braisa, what did the Baitussim do to mess things up? So like this, like you said just now, the Baitussim held that when it says that the Korban HaOmer is brought mimachras haShabbos and then Shavuos is 7 weeks later, they held that it meant that always has to take place on Sunday. We know that it's not so. That it means it takes place the day after the first day Pesach. That it takes place the second day Pesach, and Shavuos is 7 weeks after that. So now, when possible, the Baitussim would try to manipulate things into making that the first day Pesach should be on Shabbos and the second day Sunday. In fact, in Megillas Tainis, which we talked about the other day, it has a Yom Tov that the Chachamim established from the 8th of Nisan through the end of Pesach, when the Chachamim were able to definitively refute them and show that it's not correct what they're saying, the Omer does not take place always on Sunday. It takes place always on the 16th of Nisan, whatever day of the week it is. So they declared it. One of the Yom Tovim, Megillas Tainis, we're doing that time. You can't fast or make a spadium or whatever. So there's a Pamachas Bikshu by Tusim Lahakas as Chachamim. One time, the Baitusim wanted to mislead the Chachamim. What happened was that year, the 30th of Adar came out on Shabbos. Now, if the moon had been visible on Friday night, then Adim would come the next day. That wouldn't be the 30th of Adar. It would be the 1st of Nisan. 2 weeks later would be the 15th of Nisan, would be Shabbos, and the 16th would be Sunday. Because the moon was not visible on the night after the 29th, instead it would have been a 30-day Adar. Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Aleph Nisan would have been on Sunday, and Tesayin Nisan would have been on Monday. So the Baitusim figured now they have a great opportunity. They're going to hire false Edim to come and claim that they saw the moon on the night after the 29th. Bastin will accept their Eders. Therefore, we'll get that this year, the first day Pesach and the second day Pesach will be on the days of the week that we want them to. First day on Shabbos, second day on Sunday. Now, Tosfos asks, so what are they gaining from that? After all, whether they're gaining that they're making everybody celebrate Pesach on the wrong day, what good is that? And the answer is because even though the Baitusim believed only in Torah Shebichsav, there were bits and pieces of Torah Shebaal Peh that they believed in. One of them is what we're going to learn later in the Perek, that even if Beis Din declares Rosh Chodesh on the wrong day, nevertheless, we have to follow them. So they agreed with that, and therefore they said it doesn't matter. So if we end up misleading the Chachamim, and they end up declaring Rosh Chodesh on Shabbos instead of Sunday, no big deal. We agree that Hashem is fine with the Yom Tov being on those days.
When
it's an advantage for them, they believe that, right. With that said, though, the Dodos HaRishonim, a sefer on Jewish history, discusses this briefly, and he says, you see from this that the Baitosim are not really into it because of actual religious reasons. You see, it's not that they really have genuinely different explanations of the Torah than the Chacham, and they're just doing it for political reasons. Everything they're doing is just to cause tzaras, yeah. Anyway, okay. So, Sochru Shnei Bnei Odom Medalad Me'ezuz. They hired two people for a total of 400 zuz. Now you have to realize 200 zuz, I mean, each of them is getting 200 zuz. 200 zuz for those times is a huge amount of money. Echad mishalonu ve'echad mishalahem. Now one of them was actually one of ours. One of them was a frum yid. They didn't realize. They thought he was a fellow baitusi. The other one was a genuine baitusi. So Shalahem Heyde Dusaviyatza, the one who was the real Baitusi came in then. The Chachamim didn't realize that he was. He came and gave his Eidus and left, and everything seems to check out. Shalanu, then the good guy came in. Omruloy, and the Chachamim started the interrogation. Emer Kesed Reise Salavana. Tell us how you saw the moon. Omalahem, so he tells them, Oyla Hoyisi Mala Adumim. I was walking up Mala Adumim as a hill near Yerushalayim. I saw that the moon was crouching between two rocks. Its head resembled the head of a calf. Now, this sounds very silly, so we're going to talk about, let's finish the story, and then we're going to talk about what he really represented with this. Its ears resembled the ears of a goat, of a baby goat. Its horns resembled the horns of a deer. Its tail was tucked between its legs. I gave a look at it, and I was so startled, and I fell backwards in shock. And he continues, and if you don't believe me, then I have 200 zuz wrapped up in my coat over here. Now, on one level, of course, he's telling them this in order that they should notice something's fishy over here. Nobody describes the moon like that. And therefore, in other words, that'll get him to his point that, in other words, that the Baitusim hired him, as we're going to go on to say. But one second, let's finish the story and then let's talk about deeper ideas in this. So the Chachamim asked him, who put you up to this? So he says, Shamaiti should be true by Tusim Lahatas as Chachamim. I heard that by Tusim are planning to mislead the Chachamim. So I figured, Elach Aniva Odia Lahem, I will go, I'll pretend to be a Beit Tosi, and I'll go as part of the mission. Shemi Yavoyu B'nei Adam She'enim Hoganim, because otherwise people who are not Erlecha people might come, the Yatu as a Chachamim, and they're going to mislead the Chachamim, and you're going to actually end up, and you're going to actually end up accepting their ages. Omru Loi, so the Chachamim told him, Mosayim Zuz Nesunim L'chav Matana. The 200 Zuz you get as a present. Now, you didn't keep your end of the bargain because you didn't give the Eidos that they wanted. Nevertheless, Hefker based in Hefker, so we have the authority to take that money away from them and give it to you as a reward for what you did. And the one who hired you to do this, Yimasach al ha'omod, will be stretched out on the omod. In other words, he's going to be brought to based in and given Malchus. So at that point, the Chachamim made the takana of on Mishnah that you only accept from the Makirin.
Didn't speak about the money to the guy, the bad guy.
Well, the bad guy got his 200, and nothing. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't say that they did. I mean, mainly they were going to go after the person who hired them. After all, also, I guess the vote is the other one, the first one, they don't have solid evidence that he is a Beit Tosi. Yeah, he gave his testimony, but that could be because he was afraid to say something different or whatever. So maybe they don't have enough evidence to go and give him Malchus and take away the money from him. Mashenkin, whoever hired them, there's enough evidence that he is in fact a Russia, that he's hiring false Edim for them to be able to punish him. When we say Vasechacha means the one who hired you. Vasechacha, the one who hired you to aid him, you Yimasachal Omer is going to get catched. Now, what does he mean with this description over here? So there's a sefer called Akedas Yitzchak, also known for short just as the Akedah, which has different fundamental discussions, different discussions about fundamental concepts in Yiddishkeit. So he talks about the idea of that we're going to learn again that Atam Afilu Shogim, Atam Afilu Mezidim, that the Torah gives the Chachamim the absolute rights over the calendar. And then, and how can that be? He says, after all, you even have time, like in this story over here, where the Chachamim were almost misled. But he says, that's how it is. That's Zeris HaKosev, that's that way. So he explains what this guy was saying was like this. He's hinting at what caused the situation where we have such a hard, where we're in a danger where you, Chachamim, might even be misled, as we see that already you're halfway to being misled because you already accepted the first Aedos without realizing that he's a Beit Tosi. It all starts out, he's saying with Mala Adumim, we're living under the domination of Edom, the Romans. We're Bain Bay's Sloyim, we're between two mountains representing that, fine, not all of us live under Edom, some of us live under Yishmael or Paras or what have you, but we're crushed like between the two big rocks of the two big Goyish powers. The head resembling an eagle represents, where does this all start about from? From the Chet Eagle, that it all starts from that things are going downhill ever since then. The ears are like a goat, like a baby goat. He says the vote is that a baby goat, when it's young, then it's tender, it's tasty, but then it gets older and it becomes tough and it becomes in temperament, it becomes chutzpedik. And the same way, the Jewish people started out with ears ready to hear what Hashem says, Nasa v'nishma, and then they started going bad. Kind of dreamus l'tzvi, the horns resembling the horns of a deer or of a gazelle. Such horns are very weak. In fact, they fall off every year and new ones grow. The antlers of a deer or whatever fall off every year. So it represents that the horn, the strength of the Jewish people has gotten very weak. And znovim munachas le'ben yachosev, the tail tucked between the legs, represents that people are afraid to speak up. So he's saying, when I saw how badly we Jewish people are doing, I was so startled that I fell backwards, imagining how badly we Jewish people are. And he continues to them, he says, if you don't believe me, meaning if you're going to think that this was valid Eidos and you should declare Rosh Chodesh, then I might as well keep the 200 Zuz. Then the Beit Tosim have been successful in fooling you, and then I earn my pay. So when they tell him you can keep the 200 Zuz, they're telling him, no, you don't have to worry about that. We believe you. Either you can keep the 200, like we said, because Hefker based in Hefker, or fine, we may have to return the 200 to them because you didn't keep your end of the bargain, but we're going to give you 200 as a reward for coming forward and telling us. And then the other guy is going to get Malchus.
Yeah, well, he did say Aedus, just said wrong Aedus.
Right, but still, yeah. But their purpose was to say Aedus, that'll actually make them declare Rosh Chodesh on the wrong day.
You couldn't just say straight out that was
fired. Yeah. But he was hinting at all this idea. In other words, according to that Akedat Yitzchak, he's hinting to them, why is it that we're in such a danger that you might be misled? And he's explaining like the underlying factors. Marshall also over here has a somewhat similar explanation that's different in some details. He says that the Rosh Hashanah Eagle refers to, again, he says, Mala Adumim represents the Romans. The Shnei Sloyim, he says, actually refers to the famous story in Sanhedrin, where the Yehuda ben Bava had to hide out between two big mountains in order to give Chachamim Smicha because the Romans had outlawed it. So that's represented by the Beis Sloyim, like the whole concept of Smicha, the whole concept that there should be a Beis Din being Mekadosh the Chadoshim is in danger, and you have to have heroic Chachamim like that to keep it going between two rocks. Rosh Hashanah LaEgel refers to a story in Psachim where we learned about in Psachim, where Rav Shimon wants Rav Akiva to teach him Torah while he's in jail, and Rav Akiva is afraid to because the Romans are going to find out, and then they're going to execute him, and then they're going to punish Rav Shimon as well. And Rav Shimon says, yes, but I'm like a calf. So Rav Shimon tells him, Ego was sakana, fine, but you know, who's really in danger? Me, the calf. But the calf desperately wants the nurse from her mother. So therefore, that's represented over here. Roshe, Doimel Egel, the head of the Jewish people, are like that calf that desperately want to learn Torah, but the Romans keep interfering with it. Osnav Doimel Legdi, again, represents people who are supposed to be listening. The Talmidim desperately want to listen to Torah, but they're being blocked from it by the Romans. Count of Doimel Legdi, again, represents that the strength of the Jewish people is weak. And it keeps on falling off. And this Novi, Munachas Leimen Yachosev, refers, he says, this Novi refers to the Amir Oret, like they're tucked away and they're hidden.
I have a feeling that someone doesn't belong to there.
Oh, so fine. Okay, fine. One second. Oh, yeah. Give us a second. Okay, so to continue then, yes. So according to Marashah, then the last part is he's mentioning Znobe Munachas Leben Yachosev, the tail tucked between the legs, representing the Amir Oretz, who are hidden away. And therefore, again, in other words, the Jewish people are in danger. And therefore, when I saw that, when I realized how bad off we are, then I was very startled. Okay, so that was the end of it then. So the Chachamim made that new takana, that we only accept Eidos from people that we trust, from people that we recognize. The Mishnah mentions another difference between the way it used to be and the way it is now. Originally, they would light signal fires to from one mountain to the other to say when Rosh Chodesh was declared, and that would go a lot faster, of course, because that literally goes the speed of light. So therefore, they could get the message out much faster. But once the kusim messed things up, meaning that they lit the fires at the wrong times. Then the Chachamim made the takana that instead we send out shluchim. So in the previous perek we talked about the shluchim who go out for six different months. So now we're saying that wasn't the original way of doing things. The original way involved masuas.
Masuas,
the fire, the torches. Yeah, torches. Yeah, but the Gemara is going to explain that the word masuas means burning. So then the shluchim went out. Where of course the shluchim go a lot slower. But that was the only thing they could do. At least the shluchim would carry with them a letter from Beis Din saying that they're authentic. Yeah, they're authorized. Yeah. Kate said, "Hoyu masiin masuos." How do they do these masuos? And now you could ask, why does the mission need to tell us all the details? My dehava haba. One thing is, we learned in Beitza that if there ever comes a time while there's still Makadosh Apiaria, when there are no more kusim to worry about, then we can go back to the masuos, because after all, that is the better way. It gets out the message faster. So therefore, so it's relevant for us to know that Rashash explains. That's why the Mishnah gives us all the details, even the names of the mountains and everything, so that we should know how to reestablish it if we ever dispose of the problem of the kusim. Well, also love it when Mashiach comes and we go back to doing our piriya. Obviously, there's not going to be a problem of kusim anymore. We're not going to need signal fires. I mean, nowadays we have modern methods of communication. Yeah, the pashtus they can send out the message through broadcasts or through WhatsApp or what have you. Yeah.
Okay.
It's possible that they did. It's possible, but nevertheless, okay. So they could send out more shluchim if they needed to. I mean, So ketzed hoyu masin masuos. How do they make these torches? Mivin klointes shel erez aruchin. They would take long poles of cedar because they have to be too long in order that you can see the fire from a distance. Vekonim, and they would take sticks which are flammable. Va'atze shemen. And balsam wood, which is also very flammable, or odus shapishton, and combings of flax, all those things light on fire very easily. So all those make a nice big flame. the Kodach b'Mashicha, they would wrap all of those things around, they would tie all those things to the end of the stick with a rope. The Ola l'Rosh Ahar, the person would then go up to the top of the appropriate mountain, which we're going to learn in the Mishnah soon, the list of the mountains. Umatzis behenes ha'or, he would light the bundle on fire. Umoylech umeviu malu umoded, then he would go back up and down, and Moylech umevi is back and forth, left to right and right to left, and up and down. Now the reason why he did that, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, if he did it only in one direction, only up and down, people might think it's a shooting star. If you do it only left to right, people might also think of a comet or a shooting star. But you never have them going in both directions, this way and this way. So therefore, they did that. That way, people would realize that it's signal fire. So they do that. Until he sees the next person doing it on the next mountain. So eventually, in other words, you'd have somebody waiting on the next mountain, waiting for that signal. When he saw it, then he would light his torch as well and to pass the message on to the next one. And then the first person could put out his torch because the message was received. And the same thing on the third mountain and continuing from there.
This could be an hour. I mean, you have to step. It's going to take hours to be able to see this happening, right?
No, you know, it doesn't take time to see. No, what we're talking about is, in other words, we're going to learn in the Gemara. We'll talk about in the Gemara tomorrow, Best Hashem, which months they would do this for. The rule is, the Gemara is going to say, they only did this after a Chodesh Chaser. They did this, so when you had a Chodesh Chaser, the night following the 30th, so the night following the 29th would be the last night of the previous month. The night following the 29th and the morning of the 30th is already Rosh Chodesh. That night, they would do these signal fires. So what would happen is, in a case, so every time on the 30th, on the 31st night of the previous month, people would be waiting on these mountains. If they see, so for example, we're going to say in the Mishnah, the first mountain was Harazes, and the second one is a mountain called Sautava. So for example, you'd have somebody waiting on top of Sautava when it became nightfall at that time. He'd have all this equipment with him, and he'd wait until if he sees the signal from Harazes, then he would light his own fire, and then you'd have the next one, and the person on the next station, Grufina, would also do the same thing, and so on and so forth. Yeah. If not, if they didn't see anything, then they don't light theirs.
They'd have to be there from
they'd have to be there
from 9 o'clock at night until...
Yeah, they'd have to be there at some... At some point, let's say from Shkia. No, not necessarily that long. No, why would they have to take that long? The plan would be that they would light it as soon as possible after Tzeitzek HaChavim, let's say, so that so it's dark and they can see. Hold on. The moon was visible the previous night, let's say. Now comes the night following the 30th, and that's when we're going to be doing these torches. You can't do it that night because Beis Din hasn't yet been Mekadosh L'Chodesh. And you can't do it by day because you're not going to see them from a distance. So here, let's give an actual example. This past Shabbos was Shabbos Mevarchim. Rosh Chodesh now, this month is a Chodesh Chaser, and the upcoming Rosh Chodesh is on Friday. If instead it was going to be a 30-day month, then you would have that Rosh Chodesh is going to be Friday and Shabbos. Now, so let's say, for example, this time it being a Chodesh Chaser. So we have, in other words, the moon is visible the Thursday night. Friday morning, based on the Makadosh the Chodesh, and say it's Rosh Chodesh. Okay, in this case, it's Friday night. They can't do the torches Friday night. Fine, we're going to discuss that in the Gemara, but whatever. Had it been some other day of the week, then that night, that following night, the night after Rosh Chodesh, is when they would do the torches. And that would be a signal to everybody that there's only one day of Rosh Chodesh this month. So now the vort is, in other words, that. So on that evening, before Shkia, or before Tzeitzek HaChavim, let's say, people would be climbing up to each of these mountains along the route with their equipment, with their long poles and atzei shemen and so on and so forth. And then they're waiting to see if they see the signal from the mountain before them. Then they know to light theirs and carry on the signal to the next one and so forth. And it goes like that.
When they get up there, once the Rosh Chodesh that day, they're lighting the Rosh
Chodesh. Yeah, they're lighting at the night following Rosh Chodesh. That's what we're saying.
After Rosh
Chodesh. After Rosh Chodesh, yeah.
So what are they lighting? To know when?
To know that there was no second day of Rosh Chodesh. It and tells everybody there's no second day of Rosh Chodesh. And automatically, then you know the Yom Tov from that, of course. Where were the actual places where they did the Masuris? Mehara Mishcha to Sautava, Mehara Mishcha, which is Harazesim, to Sautava. There's different possibilities. Different geographers have a field day with this Mishnah where exactly these various mountains were. There was a mountain near the Yaudin, like on the corner of the Shomron, called Sautava. So many people say it's that. There's another argument that maybe it's a place in Eber Yaudin, whatever. Anyway. Base built in was a city on the border between Eretz Yisrael and Babel. So So when we base built in Lezazer Misham, so from base built in, they don't continue the chain from there. The guy, he doesn't move from there. In other words, he doesn't go, you don't look, there's not another mountain where they look. What he does is he's doing the waving his torch back and forth. Until he sees the entire Goyla, which the Gemara is going to say specifically means the city of Pumbedisa that looked like a big fire. In other words, the Gemara is going to say what would happen is when the people in Pumbedisa, which was the center of Jewish life in Babel, when they saw the signal fire from Beis Dilton, each person in the town would go and take a torch from his house and climb up onto his own roof and light his torch. So therefore, the guy standing in Beis Dilton sees from a distance the city of Pumbedisa. It looks like one big fire. And then, of course, from Pumbedisa, they would transmit the news to the rest of Babel. So one reason why we need this list of the actual mountains is because if they're ever able to reestablish it, if the problem with the Kusim disappears, then they can reestablish it. So we need to know the route. There's a sefer called Maaseh Rekeach. From Rabbi Lazar Rekeach, who was the Rav of Amsterdam a couple of hundred years back. He gives an interesting point, an interesting remez in it. He says it's also meramez on the trajectory of a person as far as his meisim, as far as going from being a tzaddik to chas v'shalom a rasha and vice versa. So how does Mishcha represent the tzaddik, who has like the oil of Torah and mitzvahs on his head? He might unfortunately deteriorate and go to Sartava. So each one of these ones he finds an appropriate gematria with it. But also the word Sartava suggests Sartava. He goes away from goodness. So he becomes a Rasha. And then he goes even worse to Grufina, which he relates to a word in the Zohar, meaning somebody who gets like swept up into Gehenna. But then he's not lost. He can still go to Chavron, where one meaning of Chavron is white. He can clean himself up and become white again, and even go all the way back up to Beis Dilton, which he associates with Malchus. So therefore, the Mishnah is also hinting to us, and in Masechta Rosh Hashanah, which is talking about the whole concept of Tshuva, about how a person can fall down, but then raise himself back up again. The Maaseh Rekeach says this on Mishnah Yassin. Let's learn one line of Gemara, and then we'll leave the rest for tomorrow. Bas Hashem. The Gemara says, "My mashma del masiyin lishna diyakodhu." Where do we see the word masiyin means to light something on fire, which we're saying masiyin masuris. You have a pasuk in Shmuel when it describes that David fought against the Plishtim and they ran off the battlefield and left their idols behind. That David and his men by Yisoyim. We translate it as David set them on fire because they were getchkas. They didn't want to have any hanah from them. So therefore, we see that the word masuris means to set them up, to set things on fire. And in fact, the parallel pasuk in Divrei Hayamim says that David said they should be burned. Although interestingly, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah mentions another possibility that maybe vayisoim could literally mean they carried them off, in the sense that if they had a goy over there, there was Itai Agiti, was a goy, was able to be mevatel these Avodah Zarahs, and then they'd be able to have anah from them. So there is the possibility that vayisoim could actually mean they took them away. But nevertheless, the Targum translates it that they burnt them, and therefore we can use the word masuris to mean things that are burnt, torches. I don't know. You could be if they're gold, you can melt them down. If they're silver, you can melt them down. If they're wood, you can use them for firewood, etc. Until you mevatel them, they're also bahana. But whatever they're made out of all kinds of materials, the pastures, yeah. Okay.